Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Motivational Intelligence Podcast. And this is actually a very special episode of the podcast. Usually on this podcast, it's our job to interview world-class trainers, human performance specialists, and overall extraordinary people to deconstruct for you what makes people and organizations successful, give you the tools and tips that you can use in your own life and your own career. Today, we're actually taking you inside a motivational intelligence session at NEC. NEC is one of the world's leading information technology companies. And we're taking you inside a session with them on how you can thrive in chaos. Why? What should you do when everything seems to be going wrong? Why might everything going wrong be the best thing that could have happened? And how do you navigate through that darkness and through that chaos and into the light? So this will give you a behind-the-scenes look at how the wonderful people at NEC have mastered this ability to thrive in chaos. So I really hope you enjoyed this episode and this look inside a motivational intelligence session at NEC.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Too Logical. Too Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Too Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to TooLogical.com.
All right. For more than two decades, this person has been internationally recognized as a leader in the field of leadership development and sales consulting. Through his role as Executive Vice President of Too Logical, he has become a trusted advisor and strategic consultant to scores of CEOs and executive leaders in many of the largest and most successful corporations in the world. Please welcome our Executive VP of Too Logical, Mr. David Naylor.
Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. There you go. I hope everybody had a fantastic evening last night. I took some time and I thought about our conversation today. And as I was thinking about it, I was reminded of something that I had read here many years back. And if you've ever flown into the Newark, New Jersey airport, you know that there's a number of oil refineries that are right there in that area. Well, several years ago, one of those refineries, it suffered a major oil leak. And what happened was this led to a huge refinery fire. Now, the flames from this fire, they were shooting hundreds of feet up in the air. And the heat, well, the heat was so intense that the early fire crews that responded, they actually parked their trucks 200 yards back from the refinery, just to shield themselves from the intense heat. Well, they very quickly realized that they were going to need some additional help to get this fire under control. So they called in some additional fire companies to help. One of these companies that responded was Engine Company 127, which is led by Captain Jim Jenkins. So here's Captain Jenkins and his fire crew, and they're racing their way to this fire. They're on their pumper truck, and they careen around a corner, brakes screeching, working to slow the fire engine down. They fly past all of the other firefighters that were parked 200 yards back from the refinery, brakes still screeching. They finally come to a stop, only after they run into the curb right there in front of the refinery. Well, the firefighters from Engine Company 127, they jumped out of the truck and they start to battle the blaze. Now, all the other fire crews that were parked 200 yards back, they were witnessing this, and they said, oh my goodness, we got to get down there, we got to help those guys. So they jumped in their trucks and they raced down to the edge of the refinery, and collectively, they were all just barely able to get that fire under control. Well, the mayor of the city of Newark, he heard about the heroic efforts of Engine Company 127 that morning. And he decided that he wanted to do something to honor their bravery, their courageousness. So what he does is one morning down on the steps of City Hall, he gathers together all of the local media, and he calls Captain Jenkins up there to the podium. He hands him a key to the city of Newark. And he looks at him, he says, "Captain Jenkins," he said, "the bravery of you and your crew, the heroics that you showed that day, the courage," he said, "it saved this city tens of millions of dollars in property damages and countless human lives." He said, "If this city could do anything," he goes, "just anything for you, what would it be?" And Captain Jenkins looks at the mayor and he says, "Well," he said, "you could definitely get us a new set of brakes for the fire engine." Now, I know that you guys have been feeling a lot of heat lately. And, you know, while the organization is working to put out the fire, I thought it would be helpful today if we took a little bit of time and we talked about how we can best weather the heat until they do. You know, in the journey through life, we're going to have triumphs and we're going to have setbacks. There's going to be times when we win and there's going to be times when we lose. We're going to have successes and failures. And through all of this, we have the ability to learn and to leverage. Chuck Swindoll had a wonderful quote in this regard, and he said that life is 10% what happens to you. Clicker's not working here. All right. Exactly. All right. Well, if we could advance the slide up in the booth, you get it? All right. There you go. So life is, yeah, there you go. Life in the moment here, huh? You know, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to it. You know, the simple reality is that, you know, unfortunately, we don't always have a lot of control over the things that happen to us. But what we do have absolute control of, in fact, there's only two things that you and I have absolute 100% control of, and that is the thoughts that we are allowing to dominate our minds and what we are choosing to do. You know, the simple reality is that most of us, we don't have the specialized knowledge required to customize and to build an SAP ERP system. So we have to relinquish control of that to people who do have that specialized knowledge. But what we must accept ultimate responsibility for in times like these are the thoughts that we are allowing to dominate our minds right now in the way that we are choosing to interact with our partners in this time of transition. Over the years, two and a half decades now, at Two Logical, we have had the privilege of working with scores of different organizations. We've also had the misfortune of being with many of these organizations during some very trying times. I remember back in the year 2000, we were working with Time Warner when they made their historic acquisition of America Online. $182 billion they spent to buy America Online. It's the most costly corporate takeover that's ever been done. We were also working with them in 2003, when they wrote off $99 billion of that acquisition, the largest corporate loss in history. It'll likely go down in history as being the most expensive business mistake that was ever made, and we were there to watch it happen. In 2007, we were working with the printer and the photocopier company, Konica Minolta, when a simple clerical error that was made led to a major manufacturing issue that left them without black printer toner. So imagine being a sales rep who has just sold a $50,000 photocopier to a customer and going to them and telling them that you can print out in any color you want as long as it's not black, right? Ultimately, it took them a year to get their inventories of black printer toner back to where it needed to be. And we were there to watch it happen. In 2010, we were working with the energy company, Baker Hughes, when the Deepwater Horizon oil rig blew up 40 miles off of the coast of Louisiana, creating the largest environmental disaster in U.S. history. 83 days later, the U.S. government shut down all drilling activity in the Gulf of Mexico. On that day, Baker Hughes had slightly more than $450 million worth of sales, closed sales, that vaporized. Can you imagine losing $450 million in sales in a single day? We were there to watch it happen. These are but a few of the turbulent issues that our clients have gone through over the years. Sadly, no company is immune, not even NEC. And so I understand, as we're sitting here today, I understand the sea of emotions that each of you has felt over the last several months. I know what it's like to be working with upset partners and facing the speed at which the company can respond. I know what it's like to feel as though you're caught in the middle. And sometimes it feels like, you can't win. Being in business in these kinds of turbulent times, it's not for the meek and the mild. Sometimes it feels like you need the patience of Job and the strength of Superman just to keep your head above water. I will share this with you, though. In all of those years and working with all of those organizations, we have learned some incredibly valuable lessons about leading in turbulent times, some absolute rules for navigating times just like this. In fact, there's four of them. Four absolute rules for navigating turbulent times. The first absolute rule for navigating turbulent times is to make sure that you are always selling the vision. Always sell the vision. George Washington Carver had a wonderful quote about the power of vision. Now, Carver, he was born into slavery in 1860 in Missouri. He was fortunate that the wife of his slave owner took to him, and as a young boy taught him how to read and how to write. In 1865, when slavery was abolished, Carver leveraged his ability to read and write to get an education. He went on to graduate from high school, but he didn't stop there. He actually got a bachelor's degree and ultimately became one of the first freed slaves to get a master's degree in botany. He went on to pioneer techniques in crop rotation and in proper fertilization. In fact, many of the farming methods that are still used to this day draw back to George Washington Carver. He was so well regarded that three U.S. presidents sought his advice on agricultural matters. So here's a man who was born a slave and ended up consulting presidents. And that's why I love his quote so much, because what George Washington Carver said was this: where there is no vision, there is no hope. Where there is no vision, there is no hope. What vision does is vision sets a destination in people's mind. It gives them a focal point that is beyond just the challenges of today. You see, one of the amazing things about the human mind is that for all of its sophistication, it is still it can only focus on one thing at a time. I'll prove it to you. Everybody, if you would, hold up your index finger for me. All right? Hold it about 12 inches from the end of your nose. Get so you can see your finger very, very clearly. You can see all the ridges and everything on your finger. And then without shifting your focus off of your finger, what I'd like you to notice is, what does the wall look like behind your finger right now? What's it look like? It's blurry, right? Yeah, it's out of focus. Now what I'd like to ask you to do is, I'd like you to keep your finger up, but I want you to shift your focus to the wall. Get so that you can see the wall very, very clearly. And without shifting your focus off the wall, what does your finger look like? It's blurry, it's out of focus. Maybe you see two of them, right? Now here's what I want you to imagine. Imagine, if you will, that your finger represents the challenges, the obstacles, the issues that we are facing right now today. And I want you to imagine that the wall out there represents the vision of where it is that we are going as an organization. It represents the benefits that we're going to gain by becoming a smarter organization, the access to information that we don't have right now, the insights that we're going to gain because of that, and how we'll be able to leverage those insights to grow our business, to help our partners to grow theirs. So I want you to notice something. I want you to notice that we can't focus on both of those things simultaneously. It has to be one or the other. But let me ask you this question. What if the vision isn't clear? It hasn't been clearly communicated out there to our partners. What if it's something that we're not talking about every single day to them? It's not top of mind. What if they don't really clearly understand the benefits that they're going to gain for paying the dues that they're paying right now? What if there is no vision out there at all? What if there is nothing out there for them to focus on? By default, they have no choice but to be consumed by all of the problems, all of the obstacles, all of the issues today. There's nothing to pull their focus off of that. So by default, they must focus on the finger. And nobody wants to get the finger in life, right? But that's exactly what they feel like they're getting, right? When there's not a clear vision out there. What vision does is vision keeps people looking up at where they want to go, rather than down at all of the potholes and the obstacles that are out there. It's, you know, it gives them hope for a better tomorrow. You see, we're all salespeople here. We all sell something, rather, you know, whether it's communication solutions or whether it's our ideas. We all sell something every single day. If we didn't, nothing would ever get done. In turbulent times, in tricky situations, the single most important thing for each of us to be selling every day to everyone is the vision of where we are going, of the benefits that they're going to gain, of why it's, you know, we're doing what we're doing, of what life's going to be like when we come out of this storm. What it does is vision, it gives them that better focal point. Without it, people feel lost. They feel defeated and dejected by the magnitude of the challenges. But vision gives them that better focal point. And this leads to the second absolute rule for leading in turbulent times. And that is to make sure that you are always proactively communicating. Estee Lauder had a wonderful quote in this regard. Now, she's a lady who was born into abject poverty back in 1908 in Queens, New York. She was one of eight children born to her Hungarian immigrant parents. She and all of her siblings, they worked as children just to help put food on the family's table. Well, when she was a teenager, she began to sell cold cream to the owners of beauty salons. She went on to create her own line of beauty products, which she ultimately built into a billion-dollar brand. In fact, she was listed by Time magazine as being one of the top 20 business geniuses of the 20th century. She was the only woman to make that list. So here's a lady who understood the power of communication. She leveraged it to build a billion-dollar company. Estee Lauder said this. She said, when you stop talking, you've lost your customer. The only way to change their mind is to change your words. In turbulent times, we want to leverage the power of our communication to show progress towards the vision. It gives our partners hope. As my good friend Peggy Murphy said to me here about a month ago, she said, you know, in times like these, the only thing that keeps people on your side is honest communication. Even if we don't have an update, even if there's nothing huge that sweeping that we can tell them, communicate anyway. Because what it does is by reaching out, it shows that we're paying attention to their issues, that we care, that they are important. In turbulent times, silence is our worst enemy, not our friend. Because in the absence of our leadership, in the absence of us communicating with them, what happens is that when we go quiet, they begin to frame their own context. They will listen to, they will follow the loudest voice, even if that voice is just the one that they hear in their own head. Sadly, the loudest voice is oftentimes the most negative voice. What most people do in turbulent times when things are rocky is they kind of become like a turtle going into its shell. Right? They go quiet. They go dark. And unfortunately, what happens is this sends the absolute wrong message. I know. It's hard. It's hard to be constantly barraged with problems and issues. And this leads us to the third absolute rule for leading in turbulent times. And that is to stay calm. In our journey through life, we, each of us, we have all these experiences, all these things that happen to us. And, you know, through all of those experiences, you know, Frank was talking, we were talking a little bit, and he was, you know, sharing about his grandson, you know, and about how mistakes little kids make and when they fall down. And you know, every time something happens, whether it's positive, whether it's negative, It gives us insights. It gives us knowledge. It gives us wisdom. Now, some people, they spend their entire lives in the pursuit of this wisdom. One of the people that has done that is a gentleman by the name of Thich Nhat Hanh. Now, he is an 89-year-old Vietnamese Buddhist monk. In fact, he is the 42nd generation of his family to become a monk. So here's a guy for literally 1,000 years. The wisdom in his family has been handed from father to son. Now, throughout his journey, Thich Nhat Hanh has become fluent in 7 different languages. He's authored more than 100 different books. He has lectured at Columbia, at Princeton, at Cornell. He was also nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize by none other than Dr. Martin Luther King. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "When you have peace in yourself, then you are calm enough to do something. But if you're carried by despair, there is no hope." There's great wisdom in Hanh's words right there, because what psychologists have proven in study after study after study is that human emotions are transferable from one person to another. If you have any doubt of this at all, ask yourself, have you ever walked into a room where there's a couple in the midst of a heated argument. And as the old saying goes, you could cut the tension with a knife. You can physically feel that tension. It's transferring to us. Or have you ever been on an airplane where there's a screaming baby two rows ahead of you, right? And I don't care if you're a parent or not, right? The more that child screams, the more they wail, the more tense we start to feel, right? That child's dominant emotion is literally transferring to us. Dominant emotions are transferable. Now, great leaders, great negotiators, great salespeople, they understand the power of emotional transferability, and they leverage it to set the optimal emotional climate to achieve their goals and their objectives. Human emotions are transferable from person to person. Regardless of whether they are positive, optimistic, relaxed, calm emotions, or heated, angry emotions. Human emotions are transferable. The more dominant they are, the more readily they transfer from person to person. Negative emotions tend to be very dominant emotions. So as we sit here today, we have to make a decision. We have to decide who needs to control that emotional climate right now. Are we going to be the ones who set that optimal emotional environment by remaining positive, by remaining calm, by staying relaxed in these times? And are we going to transfer that to our partners? Or are we going to inherit their frustration, their frustrated, angry, negative emotions? One or the other is going to happen. I remember many years ago, my wife Michelle and I, we were out grocery shopping on a Saturday afternoon, and we walked into the store, and Michelle says to me, she says, honey, she goes, will you go over to the deli counter and get us 3/4 of a pound of sliced turkey for lunches? I go, yeah, okay, no problem. So I walked over to the deli counter. And I, you know, took a number, and I'm standing there waiting. And all of a sudden, the lady behind the counter, she barks out. She goes, 57, right? And I was like, geez, you know. And I look, and I go, well, I got 57. She goes, well, what do you want, right? I was like, oh, geez, you know. So I walk up, and I say, I need 3/4 of a pound of turkey, please, right? So she points down into the case. She goes, well, what kind of turkey, right? And I look down. There's like 30 kinds of turkey sitting there, right? I don't know. I'm like, give me that one, right? So she pulls it out of the case, and she slaps it up onto the slicer, right? And she looks at me. She goes, how do you want to cut, right? I was like, oh, all these decisions, you know? And right then and there, I realized exactly what it is that we're talking about right now. I mean, here's a lady who's obvious, Scott. She's having a bad day, right? She's got a pretty dominant negative emotion, right? So she slaps up in the slicer, how do you want to cut? So I look at her and I'm like, however you feel like cutting it today, right? So she looks at me, she goes, how about one big slice, right? I look at her and go, if that's how you want to cut it, that's good with me, right? Well, you know, she just kind of looks at me, you know, and she's, you know, she's cutting the turkey off, right? She puts it into the bag. Now, at this point, my wife has walked over, right? And she takes it and she slaps it up on the counter, right? So I take it off the counter and I looked at her and I'm like, you have a fantastic day, right? And you know, and we're walking. My wife looks at me like I'm a whack, right? You know, and she goes, Dave, she goes, what the heck was that about? She goes, you're not going to brighten her day. I said, I'm not trying to brighten her day. I'm just trying to keep her from ruining mine, right? Because, but for what it is that we're talking about right now, I know what would have happened. I would have been walking through that store and I would have been feeling aggravated and agitated, right? And I wouldn't even necessarily understood why. Because that lady's emotion would have transferred to me. So, as conscious, competent leaders, we have to move knowingly. We have to accept ultimate responsibility for the dominant thoughts that we are allowing to resonate in our minds, because ultimately those thoughts are going to become the emotions that we are projecting to our partners in times like these. And we've got to decide, what emotion do we want to transfer? And yes, I know, it is hard to be barraged with problems and issues and to remain calm. But if we do, if we can remain calm, if we remain positive in times like these, as Thich Nhat Hanh said, then we can do something. But if we get carried by despair, if we inherit the negative emotions of our partners right now, there is no hope. And that leads us to the fourth and final absolute rule for leading in turbulent times. And that is to make sure that under no circumstances do we minimize or do we point fingers and place blame. Dr. Douglas Copeland has a wonderful quote and perspective in this regard. Copeland is an author. He is an artist. He is a futurist. He has been called one of the most gifted interpreters of North American cultural writing today. He's one of the very first people who was able to identify the distinct shifts that happened in the culture that influenced each of the generations that are in the work world today. He's also the individual who coined the term Generation X and Generation Y. What Dr. Douglas Copeland said was this. He said, blame is the lazy person's way of making sense out of chaos. Blame, it defers responsibility. It pushes it off. It creates a common enemy that both we and our partners can point to for our troubles, right? It's those SAP people. It's the IT department. It's some faceless executive at corporate, right? They're all against us, right? Wrong. While it may be easy, while it may make us feel good, it's a losing hand. We all learn together about the debilitating effects of victim thinking, right? You can't build anything on a foundation of victim thinking. Victims never win. It's impossible to. And the greatest challenge in turbulent times with blame is that what it does is it creates cracks in the foundation of what people come to believe about the great organization that we represent, NEC. While they may love us, they come to believe that the organization that we represent is fundamentally flawed. And this will never end well. We learn together that thoughts and beliefs always drive actions, and actions always drive results. So as they start to create flawed thinking about us, it can't help but influence their actions as a result. So, I had a kind of a neat situation that happened here not too long ago. I had the opportunity to rewatch the classic movie Top Gun. And if you remember this movie, it had Tom Cruise was the lead character, right? And he was a naval aviator, a fighter pilot. And he played a character whose call sign was Maverick. And he was a very ego-driven kind of guy, had a big chip on his shoulder, something to prove, right? And because he's a great fighter pilot, they sent him off to Top Gun School in Miramar, California, to train in air-to-air combat. So Tom Cruise goes off to this school, and they're training him on how to dogfight, how to be up there in the air. And what they do is they train the pilots to fly in a formation where you've got a lead plane and what's called a wingman. And they fly in this formation so that they can protect one another. Well, They go through these series of air-to-air combat, you know, different scenarios and things like that. Well, school's starting to wind down. And Tom Cruise, he's up there, he's flying in one of these mock dogfights with another pilot, Iceman, who's played by Val Kilmer. So they're up there flying in formation, and all of a sudden, over the radio, comes Viper. Now, Viper is played by Tom Skerritt, who is the head of the Top Gun school. So here's a guy who's supposed to be the best fighter pilot in the Navy, right? So, Tom Cruise is up there, and he's thinking, oh, man, look, this is the first time I'm flying against Viper, and here's a great chance for me to prove what an incredible fighter pilot I am. So they're flying up in formation, and Iceman radios over to Tom Cruise, Maverick, and he says, Maverick, he goes, don't you leave me, Maverick, don't you leave me, right? And Tom Cruise radios back. He goes, Iceman, he goes, you go after Viper, you go after Jester. He goes, I'm breaking off. He goes, I'm going after Viper. And he breaks off the formation, and he starts chasing Viper through the air, and they're doing these incredible acrobatic maneuvers and just crazy, crazy stuff. And as Tom Cruise is sitting there and he's concentrating so hard on getting Viper's plane in missile lock, all of a sudden, a warning light goes on in his plane. And this warning light is telling him that an enemy aircraft has gotten him in missile lock. And he's in position now to be shot out of the sky. Well, Viper comes over the radio and he says, he goes, Maverick, he goes, get your butt down on the ground. He goes, I want to see you. So they land their planes, and Tom Cruise is standing there, and Viper, Tom Skerritt walks up to him, and he goes, son, he goes, that was some pretty impressive flying out there today. He goes, some of the best I've ever seen. He goes, right up till you got killed. He goes, son, he goes, never, ever, ever leave your wingman. He goes, when you leave your wingman, people die. I would argue that the ramifications in business aren't quite as great, right? Because people don't die. But what happens is, what people come to believe about our great organization, that's what gets affected. It starts to undermine the foundation of what they believe in our organization. And that ultimately will influence their actions. So in times like these, although it's easy, we never want to point the finger back at our organization. We never want to minimize the issues that our partners are facing. So these are four simple rules that I have watched our clients leverage over the last 2.5 decades to navigate some of the most turbulent times that we can even imagine. I have no doubt that these four rules, they will serve you well in the days and weeks ahead. And I'd like you to remember one very, very important fact. And that is that oftentimes, organizations, our partners, they don't judge us based upon how well we do things when everything is going right. No. The way that individuals, the way that organizations, the way that our partners judge us is based upon how we react when things go wrong. That's how they ultimately come to frame us up in their mind. I remember many years ago, I went to a Nordstrom store. I bought a pair of shoes, and I wore these shoes probably half a dozen times. And what happened was the sole on both of the shoes cracked. And so once the sole had cracked, every time I walked in the shoes, they kind of made this flapping noise, right? It sounded like I was a duck walking, right? And it bugged me. So I never wore the shoes again. I took them and I stuck them away in my closet. And every time I went into the closet, I saw those shoes sitting there, and I'm thinking about the money I spent on them, and it bugged me that I couldn't wear them. Well, a year went by. Another year goes by. Finally, 4 years has passed, right? And I'm looking at these shoes sitting there, and I'm thinking, hey, I got to do something about these things. Well, I had a training meeting that was coming up with Pfizer down, and they have a regional training facility down in Exton, Pennsylvania. And I knew that the hotel that I was staying at happened to be right next door to a Nordstrom's store. So I'm like, hey, you know what, I'll throw these shoes in my bag and you know, I'll go over to the store in the evening and you know, maybe they can do something to fix these things. So I finished up my meeting. I went over to the Nordstrom store that night. I grabbed the shoes. I walked in and I walked into the shoe department. And I walked up to this young gentleman who's standing there behind the counter. And I bought these shoes from another Nordstrom store. And I said, I wore them probably 6 times. And the soles cracked on both of the shoes. And I said, I wanted to come in tonight and see, is there anything you guys can do to fix these? He goes, well, here, let me see. So I handed the shoes over to him. And he flips them over. He looks. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, that shouldn't have happened. He goes, I'm sorry about that. He said, do you happen to have your receipt? I said, no. I said, I don't. I said, I bought these shoes like 4 years ago, so I've lost the receipt long ago. He goes, oh, okay, no problem. He goes, come here. And he leads me over to one of the chairs, and I sit down, and he measures up my feet, and he goes, I'll be right back. And he goes back into the back room. He comes out with a shoebox in his hand, right? So he opens it up, and he pulls out this, you know, pair of shoes. And he goes, this is the latest version of the shoe that you bought 4 years ago. He goes, I want you to notice something. They changed the soles on them. It was probably because they had a problem with them cracking. He goes, here, try them on. So he puts them on me, and all right? And he goes, get up, walk around. He goes, you know, make sure they're comfortable. So I get up, and I'm, you know, walking around on them and stuff, and I come back. He goes, how do they feel? I said, well, they feel great. He goes, all right, fantastic. He goes, here, let me slip them off you, you know, and he puts them back in the box, and he goes, come here. And he leads me back up to the register, and he's punching away on the computer register. Then he looks up at me, and he says, looks like we owe you $36.71. And I'm like, excuse me? He goes, yeah, we owe you $36.71. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, the new shoes, he goes, they're actually a little cheaper than the ones that you bought 4 years ago. He goes, so we owe you the difference, $36.71. So he gives me the cash, a new pair of shoes. I walk out of the store stunned at what had just happened, right? That occurred 14 years ago. In the last 14 years, every pair of dress shoes that I have purchased, including the ones I have on right now, I have bought from a Nordstrom store. Because of my interaction with that gentleman that night, about how he interacted with me, how he treated me in a bad situation. Now, here's the really ironic part. I live in Rochester, New York. We do not have Nordstrom stores in Rochester, New York, right? I have to buy my shoes when I travel. But there's a wonderful, wonderful lesson therein. Because when you follow those 4 rules right there, what you will oftentimes find is that our darkest days give us the greatest opportunity that we have to define ourselves in the minds of our partners. Things will never always go perfectly. That is not a reality. But it's how we act when they don't go well that people remember. We follow those 4 simple rules right there. Keep reminding them of the vision. Keep talking to them. Stay calm amongst all of the craziness. Don't let their negative emotions override us. And never, ever resort to blame and in minimizing their problems. Do those 4 simple things right there. And what you just might find is out of all of the challenges that we're facing right now, we can actually develop customers first. for life. Well, I'm David Naylor with Too Logical. Thanks so much for letting me speak with you this morning.
Hey guys, one more thing before you take off. This is Motivational Intelligence Insider. It's just a very short, exclusive email every Monday that comes from Dave, John, and the guests on this show. This is the only place they share their very, very best stuff, and it's delivered right to your inbox every single Monday. This could include exclusive tips for upping your game, articles they're reading, videos they're watching, stories from the road, and on and on. It's the best way to kick off your week, and this content is comes directly from Dave, John, and the guests, and is only available to subscribers of Motivational Intelligence Insider. So if you want these guys and gals to email you their best stuff, go to twological.com/insider. That's the number twological.com/insider, and drop in your email. And if you do, I hope you enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Too Logical. Too Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Too Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs, or just want to say hey, head over to twological.com.